This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Wizarding World Lorecast. Join us as we take a deep dive into the lore of the fantastical world of the Harry Potter universe. Welcome back, witches and wizards, to another episode of the Wizarding World of Lorecast. I am one of your hosts, Ben of Temeria, followed by my awesome good friend and co-host, Nina.
Hello.
In today's episode, we thought about, Nina brought up a topic that I completely forgot to, like, I completely skipped over, and which kind of, like, mine, you know, broke me that I never done this, is the which is the Ilvermorny School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, which is none other than the American Wizarding School, which is why I don't know why I never done this when, you know, I live in America, same as Nina.
Yeah. We did
Bobapton and we did Durmstrang.
Mm-hmm.
But we never
and we did the American government form.
We did the
MASC.
Yeah, it's the
MACSU
or whatever. It's a weird acronym.
Really weird
acronym. But yeah, we never did the school, which is like, oh, might as well do the school.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, to get right with it, so Ilvermorny School of Witchcraft and Wizardry was the American Wizarding School located on Mount Greylock in Massachusetts. It accepted students from all over North America. Students of this year of the school as Hogwarts in Scotland were sorted into four houses. So, very similar. When Newt Scamander traveled to New York in 1920s, he met several people, including Porpatina, and Queenie Goldstein, who were educated at the school.
It's like a boarding school, just like Hogwarts.
And it's in Massachusetts, so, and if nobody knows, Massachusetts is, you know, the state where Boston's at, where a lot of important stuff happens in the Revolutionary War in our own history. So it kind of makes sense where the school is located.
Yes, and there's also Salem over in Massachusetts, too. That has its own history.
That has its very own history as well in our world and the wizarding world.
Yes, it's put in the right place, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So, for the location, Ilvermorny's castle was on top of the highest peak of Mount Greylock in the Berkshires of the western Massachusetts. The castle was once a granite stone house constructed by Isolt Sirey and James Stewart to their home, named after Isolt's childhood home in Ireland. When it eventually became a school, the house kept expanding until it became a castle. The front doors were adorned with marble statues of Surrey and Stewart on either side. It was concealed by several enchantments, which sometimes looked like a wreath of misty cloud.
So it's Isolt Sayer.
Isolt Sayer.
Isolt Sayer, yeah.
Isolt Sayer.
Yes, yeah, she is Irish, so she has a very interesting last name. And she has a very interesting history that I know we'll get into.
Ooh, yes. That is true. Yeah, we are getting into her history, too. Yeah.
Yeah, her history, like her childhood, is quite something.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as history goes, we do have the early history. So Ilvermorny was founded in 1627, so 637 years after Hogwarts, and the school was originally just a rough shack containing two teachers and two students. So right there, obviously really small. Ilvermorny was originally a stone house constructed by Irish immigrant Isolt Sayer and her nomad husband, James Stewart. So right there is a very important thing.
Yes.
James Stewart was a nomad, which in terms is a muggle, as in they don't have magic.
Mm-mm. And it's also really important, keep that in mind, that he's a nomad. She comes up later, too.
Mm-hmm. It became a school when their adopted children, Chadwick and Webster Boot, hoped they could return to Ireland so they could attend Hogwarts. Isolde then promised they would build their own school at their Mount Greylock home with the objective of homeschooling them. So, mm-hmm. Isolde just didn't want to go back to Ireland and, you know, I'll teach my kids home. So, thus, the school started with just a couple acting as teachers and their two adopted sons, Chadwick and Webster Boot, as students. Each of them named one of the four houses. Chadwick created Thunderbird. Webster created Wampus. Isolde created Horned Serpent. And James created Puckwudgie.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting creature, I would just say.
It is a very interesting creature. It's not the most pleasant looking creature.
No, it is not.
No. It's very scary looking.
So eventually the school enrolled more students, and the couple were able to provide wands not just for their children, but the other students as well. Among the students were Native Americans of the Wampango, and the, oh God, Narragansett tribes, who shared their knowledge of magic in return for being taught the technique to involved with wand work. Therefore, Native American magic became involved with the animations of El Mori. Over the next few years, the school grew even more, and by 1634, there were even enough children for the inner house competitions.
Amazing. I like
this. So that starts, so 1627 up to 1634, so that's what, seven years, they grew pretty big, pretty large to where they could have inter-house competitions with each other, mm-hmm. which is really nice.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of hoping they would have the, you know, Shawnee or Cherokee tribes here, because that's what I am. I have Shawnee and Cherokee blood.
Aren't they more west than east? Or more centralized?
They're eastern.
Are they eastern?
I mean, Cherokee's from Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my great-great-great-grandmother was a full-blood Cherokee.
That's amazing. I love that. That's so cool.
It was one generation away from being able to get a scholarship for my bloodline. I was one generation after the fact.
You had too many other things there.
I will say, my dad was not happy when he found out. He was like, I went to school and I could have got a scholarship from our bloodline.
Oh, like, no.
Yeah, we could have. Sorry.
Missed out.
Oh, no. But anyway, so for the first time, the school acted only as a day school for the James, Isolde, and their family as the only live-in residence. News of the school reached Europe, and Isolde's wicked aunt, Gormath Gaunt, finally found her niece. She made her way to the school and cast a curse on James and Isolde from a distance to put them into a deep sleep while hoping to kill them and abduct their newborn twin daughters. She did not know, however, that about Chadwick and Webster, and when she used the apostle tongue to disable Isolde's wand, the brothers' wands, whose cores were horn serpent, were of horn serpent horn, alerted them to the danger.
Yes.
So she is related to the Gaunts, which, if you know, in our previous episodes, the Gaunts are also the descendants of, you know, Voldemort. And the descendants, well, they're the ancestors of Voldemort, the descendants of Slytherin.
Yes. Which is wild to think that.
Which now kind of makes sense why she created the Horned Serpent.
Yes.
Kind of like.
And the fact that she just decided that the whole tradition of her family was stupid and she married a nomad, which I think is phenomenal.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Even incorporated him in making a school to have, to probably in the future have other children from nomad families come in, which I think is phenomenal.
Right. And the reason why she didn't want to go back to Ireland.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no reason for that now.
Yeah. So Chadwick,
terrible childhood.
Chadwick went to hold off the Dark Witch while Webster tried to wake up their parents. Webster joined the duel, and the couple were awakened by the cry of their infant daughters. While James went to protect the babies, Assault tried to join the fight, but her wand was useless. Being disabled earlier in the duel, the whole family was driven to the bedroom. Assault cried out to her late father, William, to help, and answered by her old friend, William, a puck wedgie, who killed Gorlath with a poisoned arrow. And from that day on, William and his family acted as a school security and maintenance staff.
Which explains why the Pudgewiki is such a prominent piece in the school as well.
If you go look at the Pudgewiki, it literally is like essentially like a native tribe, like goblin elf. Ish.
So the photo that I found was similar to that, but also had like characteristics of a hedgehog.
Well, there's that, but like, so right here, I pulled up the image and it literally looks like a goblin, but like a bit taller with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's like, and they're blue. They're like blue skin.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
So after Gorlath's death, Isolde and James buried Isolde's wand outside the school grounds. She did not wish to keep the wand as it was the last reminder of the unhappy childhood. Within a year, a snakewood tree grew in the ground where it was buried. Any attempts to kill it or prune it was unsuccessful, and it was kept after it was discovered that the tree contained powerful medicinal properties.
What is a snakewood tree?
Good question.
Oh, it's just used to make wands.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, interesting.
Now we get to the middle history. So by the 18th century, Ivalmori became a granite castle, and more teachers were added to the cope with the growing number of students. By this point, the school had become a boarding school. Ivalmori reached the same reputation as other schools of magic had, and the founders had concealed their school by clever enchantments, some of which made it look like a misty cloud to no mages.
Becoming part of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the Ivalmori's ex-students, Dorsus Twelve Trees, you heard that right, reeled to a no-mage named Bartholomew Barebone the location of the school, among with the information concerning the wizarding community. However, it turned out that Bartholomew was the descendant of a Sawyer, and it was revealed that the information that he got from Dorius to the no-match community, including Ivalmori's address, it led to one of the greatest ever breaches in international salutes to secrecy, but also the passage of Rataport's Law, which effectively segregated the no-match and wizarding communities.
So the Scours were the group of people that were hunting. They were like witch hunters.
Oh.
Essentially.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So giving out that information really put the school in jeopardy because of that conversation.
Oh. And boom, Ivalmori is in Massachusetts. It is in the state of Massachusetts in the United States.
Located in the mountain, Mount Greylock.
Mm-hmm. So when first years arrived at Ivalmori, they were sorted into the houses and was taken to another area where they would choose or be chosen by their wand. Before Rataport's Law was repealed, students were not allowed a wand outside the school until they were 17 and were not allowed a wand before arriving at Ivalmori. So that is something
That's a different type of rule.
Right. That is something different from being in Europe, where you get your wand first and then you go to Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. Which I wonder if it had something to do with what Isolde went through with the wand.
Probably, I would say so. I would imagine. So by the 19th century, Ivalmori gained its international reputation. By the 1920s, Ivalmori had been flourishing for almost three centuries and was widely considered to be one of the greatest magical education establishments in the world. As a result of their shared education, all witches and wizards who attended their profession in the use of wand, they were also developed a school song.
Ooh.
So
probably not sang by toads.
So, and that's a good question, Boom. Boom asks in the chat, in our Twitch chat, is there multiple schools in the U.S. or just the one? So as far as we know, Ilvermorny is like the most well-known in the U.S. There is probably some smaller ones here and there. But yeah, as far as the country as a whole, it's the main one, just like how Hogwarts is the main one in Europe, but there's still Durmstrang and Beauxbatons in the European area.
Yeah. We wouldn't know the names of that one. At least we just know of Ilvermorny in America. If there's any other ones, we definitely don't know the names of.
So in 1926, Ilvermorny offered extracurricular xylomancy classes.
Mm-hmm. That's the class where it's like divination, but it's you tell the future by twigs and sticks.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then sacred parents, or scared, is it sacred or scared? Scared.
Scared.
Scared parents of Ilvermorny students asked Ilvermorny to hold all students during the holiday season. The New York Ghost reports on the house points and awards. An essay from Ilvermorny scholars Vanishment report was published in Transfiguration Today in 1926. And the New York Ghost is literally exactly like the
Daily Prophet.
Daily Prophet, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know why that like skipped in my head. Yeah, the New York Ghost is the Daily Prophet in the U.S. That's that's literally what it is.
It's a good name, too, for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1927, French students were offered a student exchange program to Ilvermorny for students whose parents worked at the French Ministry of Magic. Ilvermorny introduced creature care into the curriculum in 1927.
Oh, I like how they did the student exchange program. That's awesome.
Right? That sounds awesome. Yeah, it does sound awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are backward ones in the South somewhere. Oh, I guarantee you. Yeah, boom. That is, I probably guarantee you that. There's probably some backwood schools somewhere in the South. I guarantee you that.
Probably. Yeah, learning it the old-fashioned way. Keeping to traditions.
And now we have recent history. So in the 21st century, by 2016, the position of headmaster of the school was occupied by Professor Abigert Fontaine, a direct descendant of one of the original 12 orders at the Magical Congress of the United States of America, with all 7 volumes of Chadwick's Charms was still in use.
It's a lot of books. A lot of volumes. Yeah.
But this is
for Charms.
Chadwick was one of the original founding members. With the original family.
Yes, he was.
So this
yes,
like,
he was
three
the
centuries,
adopted
his
son.
Book, his books are still in use.
He knew what he was teaching. He had some strong theories.
And then in 2018, the outbreak of an unauthorized and seemingly chaotic magical activity throughout the non-magical world dealt a devastating blow to the world wizarding community on a global scale by generating a large number of large-scale breaches in the International Salute of Wizarding Secrecy. And in 2020, calamity investigators of the Statute of Secrecy Task Force arrived at the school in order to help the faculty to set up defenses, there could be, against the calamity in order to protect the school's inhabitants. And obviously that comes from the mobile AR game Wizards Unite, which no longer exists. So,
Well,
yeah, that's what we got.
Well,
that's what we got. So, we do now have the houses. So, The houses are the Horned Serpent, sometimes considered to be represent the mind of a witch or wizard. It was also said the Horned Serpent favored scholars.
Which is interesting.
Right. We have the Wampus, sometimes considered to be represent of the body of the witch or wizard. It was also said the Wampus favored warriors.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Thunderbird, sometimes considered the represent of the soul of a witch or wizard. It is also said that the Thunderbird favored adventurers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, last but not least, the Puckwudgie, sometimes considered to represent the heart of a witch or wizard. It is also said the Puckwudgie favored healers.
Yes.
So, those are the four.
I like
houses.
How they do the different parts of what makes a person, where you have the mind, body, soul, and heart.
So instead of like a really Hogwarts, sweet. when you get sorted in Hogwarts, it's based by your personality traits, essentially.
Yes.
Whereas in the US with Evil Mori, it's based on what body part you mainly represent, essentially.
I wonder if it has something to do with chakras too.
That could be.
I like that idea. Although the soul isn't really, I mean, the soul is a different point. It's not really a chakra. But either way, it embodies everything.
It's Puck Wudgie. Sorry, not Wedgie. It's Puck Wudgie. 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 Not Wedgie. Mm-hmm. Wudgie.
Wudgie.
No, it's a Puck Wudgie. Wedgie. Puck Wudgie. Back when WizardWorld.com was Pottermore, they did, when the Fantastic Beasts films came out, they actually did do a wizard sorting quiz, just like we do have the Hogwarts quiz today, but for the United States, for Evilmore.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Thunderbird. I do remember that.
Ooh.
And then when they redid the entire website and change it to
Wizarding World,
they took that quiz away because it kind of like they didn't want, since the housing and a lot of that stuff and what they were doing and how they were marketing a lot of stuff and making it more towards the Wizarding World for like Universal, they took that out because they don't have an Evilmori like school at the park.
They
wanted to be close and tied with the park. Because now, mm-hmm. if you go and do your, say, your quiz for your wand, and whatever mm-hmm. wand you get, you can actually go buy your wand at Universal or on the Universal website of the wand from your quiz.
That's cool. I need to do that.
Have your own wand.
Mm-hmm.
I have mine.
Yep, of course.
Of course I do. Because it's great, and I kind of need it for October, so...
It's true. That is very true.
It will need it. So now we do get into their sorting. So there are the four mm-hmm. houses. So the Horned Serpent, Wampus, Thunderbird, and Puck Wudgie. When a student started their education at Evilmori, they would step onto a Gorgon knot on the floor of the center of the entrance hall with a large wooden statue of the mascots of the four houses facing them. The carved statues would react if they wanted the student in their house. The older students watched in silence from a circular balcony on the floor above them as the new students were sorted. The carvings reacted in different ways. The crystal in the Horned Serpent carving forehead glowed. The Wampus carving roared. The Thunderbird carving beat its wings. And the Puck Wudgie carving raised its arrow.
So the Gordian knot, in case you're wondering, actually has like a history to it. It's a rich history to it. And it goes all the way back to Greek, like Greece.
Ooh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's a knot made of tightly entangled cornel bark, and it's whoever could unravel it would be destined to rule all of Asia. And Alexander the Great was actually the one who solved it by just slashing it with his sword. He just cut it in half.
Great.
Yeah. So the concept of it is to. Sometimes bold actions and innovations are necessary to overcome seemingly impossible situations. And she put this concept into the school Isildur, and they just want them to think outside the box and to overcome challenges, not always in the traditional sense, which I think is really cool.
That is really cool. And mm-hmm. Boom did ask which one of the houses, the Dark Arts house, that is something that the Evilmori doesn't really have, because there was Mm-mm. not a founding member with the Dark Arts compared to Hogwarts.
Yes, so there's not really that kind of
doesn't have that reputation of Slytherins like Hogwarts.
No,
just think of the pug with pants on that was a while. No, that's not a pug. That's not a Puck Wudgie. That is not what that is. It is not a pug.
You're really liking this word, aren't you?
Boom is loving this word. So, however, sometimes more than one carving would try to select the same student. If this happened, the student would be able to choose the house they preferred. This happened very rarely, sometimes as rare as once a decade or even a generation, as in the case of one student, a student who would be selected by every house, Sophinia Pecquari, who was president of the MACUSA from 1920 to 1928 was known to have this honor. She chose the horned serpent.
I wonder if they have the same, just sorry, since she was 1920 to 1928, I wonder if they have the same policy of you could only run like two terms max, like the 4-year terms.
That's a possibility. I would not put that behind them because obviously this is in the U.S. So I'd imagine they would have very similar laws to the United States.
How the politicians are ran, essentially.
Yeah.
Hopefully not as corrupt.
I believe the ministry is corrupt. The parliament, as far as I know, is not really corrupt. As far as I know. I don't know anything about British politics. But as far as I'm aware, the Ministry of Magic operates very similar to the parliament. As well.
Oh, okay.
I believe, if I recall. Except they don't really have like a full, like, I think they have the head, technically, of the parliament. But they have everybody else who comes in and decides with them.
I mean, it would make sense to have a mirror each other, just to save from trying to change too many ideas.
Right. And that way, a lot of laws could be roughly the same, to where no mages and wizards and witches in each community would be able to operate equally, but if anything arises to where they, you know, need to stay in hiding, they know what to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you're in Europe, because none of the freaking witches and wizards know how to do anything in the Muggle world.
No, they don't.
Not at all. Not at all. No. Well, I mean, so, like, for instance, and we went over this during our MACUSA, MACUSA episode, where they literally, it's in New York, the Empire State Building, I believe, is literally, the entrance for no mages is the Empire State Building, but, like, the entrance for wizards and witches for the MACUSA is also the Empire State Building. They go through the same entrance.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That's some strong magic.
By doing that, you have to know no mages life in at least in the U.S. Because they are so closely knit,
right?
Compared to Ministry of Magic in Europe, it's like, you know, underneath London and everything and magic and whatnot.
Yeah, it's like the underground.
They can like separate themselves. Back on topic here. So after the sorting, the student would be brought in a large hall where they would be chosen once more, this time by a wand. Prior to the end of Rapport's Law, children could not have a wand prior to schooling and have leave their wand at the school during school breaks. This can only take the wand out of the school when they reach 17 years of age. Now, obviously, this is prior to the end of Rapport's Law. Once that ended, it was just like in Europe, to where you could actually have a wand before you go to school and also after, like, once you leave the school.
So I was trying to see when Rapport's Law was pretty much disbanded. I think 1965 is possible when it was.
It was repealed
in 1965.
So it started in 1790.
Yeah.
All the way up to 1965.
Gosh. And then at that point, the wizards and nomads could be married without any problems.
Correct. Yeah. U.S. It was very
frowned upon.
Yeah, well, that, but it was also very similar to something else in the U.S. that we'll not discuss on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that was happening during that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yes.
We're not
going to
talk about that. Because history doesn't need to be talked about, because it's gone. Anyway,
it's gone.
And Boom, before we go to our mid break, Boom is asking, so off topic, but did either of you ever play Quidditch World Cup? Are you talking about like the GameCube game Quidditch World Cup? Yes, I definitely played a lot of that. I love that game. I have not played. There is a new Quidditch game coming out.
That one I will play.
That one I will play too. I was invited to play the beta, but it was only on Steam, and I didn't have the time to play it, unfortunately. So I was unable to play it, but I will be playing it once it does come out fully on console, because I'm more of a console player than a PC player. I do PC stuff with my podcasts and voiceover stuff, but when it comes to gaming, I prefer to be on a console.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
I feel you. I like controllers.
Yes.
I never played the GameCube one. I didn't have access to it growing
so
up.
Fun. It was so much
fun. Unfortunately.
So, like, the first three Harry Potter games and the Quidditch World Cup were probably the best Harry Potter games. Once Goblet of Fire came out, it kind of started going downhill because they were just very... It was stage built. Instead of like free roam,
it was I don't like that.
Yeah. Prisoner of Azkaban was the best Harry Potter game before Hogwarts Legacy, obviously. Before Hogwarts Legacy, Hogwarts Legacy beats them all by a mile. Like,
oh god, yeah, I bet
it's phenomenal. But anyway, let's get to our mid break. All right, welcome to the middle of the show, where we're talking about everything with the podcast. It has nothing to do with the lore of the Wizarding World. Here, we want to thank all of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you want to help support the show, there's a few ways you can do so. You can go to patreon.com/WizardingWorldLoreCast, where you can sign up for ad-free episodes or join us once a month at the end of the month of an episode, where you can choose a topic of your choosing. And then you can also support us on Apple and Spotify. You leave a 5-star review on Apple with some words. We'll read that out loud the next time on the show, as well as a nice Spotify comment, which we do have a Spotify comment this week. It's from our good old friend, Yorne. And he says, guys, Hermione's favorite place is not a bookstore. It's the library. Okay, I mean, you are right. You are right, Renee. But library, bookstore, tomato, tomato. There's books.
That's where you get books. Yeah.
Exactly. There's books. So, I mean, if there's no library in sight, bookstore is probably a pretty close second. She just has to pay for the books instead of getting them for free.
True.
So, just saying. So there's that.
Thanks, Yorne.
Right? And then you can also go to a few different Discord servers. You can go to the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net, as well as my own Discord server, the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord, where you can find this show, as well as the other shows that I host, the Holocron Histories, the Final Fantasy Lorecast, and the Witcher Lorecast. So do all of those shows, as well as this one. It's a lot of fun. Go to the Discord. We have a lot of people joining. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on my Twitch channel at twitch.tv/BenOfTemeria, to where you can find us live, join the chit chat, just like Boom is today, asking questions while we are in chat, which is a lot of fun. And thank you, Boom. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Other than that, I think that's all I have for the mid break myself. Do you have anything else to add?
No, not today.
All right. Well, let's get back into more Ilvamori. All right, we are back, and now we have the reputation of Ilvamori. So, as might be expected of a school part founded by a nomad, Ilvamori had the reputation of being one of the most democratic, least elitist of the great wizarding schools. Least elitist of all great wizarding schools. Students were also well-versed in the use of a wand. So right then and there, that off the bat tells you Ilvamori is probably one of the best schools.
Yes, absolutely. It's got all of the, all the differences that you could have in the world. And they don't segregate themselves between nomage and witcher wizard.
Right, which is great.
There's none of that.
Kind of helps that Nomadge also was one of the founding members.
Oh, yeah, absolutely helps.
Fantastic. So, in addition 2579 of Transfiguration Today, an essay from Illinois scholars were featured on the front page and on page 4 of the magazine. So,
I'm sure it was a good article. Yeah.
So now we have their uniform. So the robes of Illinois were a blue and cranberry. The colors honored Isolde and James. James, blue because it was Isolde's favorite color and because she had wished to be a Ravenclaw house as a child. Cranberry in honor of James's love of cranberry pie. All Illinois students' robes were fastened by a gold gorgon nut. In memory of the brooch Isolde found in the ruins of the original Illimori cottage.
I very much enjoy that entire paragraph is my favorite so far.
That is fantastic. I love how they literally put in Isolde's like what she wanted to be, and even like James random, like he loved cranberry pie. Like, I just love that. That's just great. Their legacy lives on. Hundreds and hundreds of years later.
Especially with that cranberry pie.
Right? Oh my god. So, and then, however, the school robes worn by Chadwick and Webster Boot were identical, being mostly blue with cranberry red trim. They were also wearing black waistcoats and brown breeches underneath their robes.
Mm-hmm. I'd assume that the nomad and wizarding robes would kind of co-mingle in their attire.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we move on to the subjects that Illimori taught. So obviously we have Defense Against the Dark Arts. So commonly shortened to DADA was the class that taught students defensive techniques to defend against the dark arts and to be protected from dark creatures. Defense Against the Dark Arts was one of the subjects which has been taught at Illimori since the 17th century. One of the professors of this subject was Ronash Steward, the daughter of Illimori founders, Isolde and James.
Which I'm assuming was one of the newborn twins, identical twins.
Yeah, one of the twins.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now we have Charms. So Charms was another known subject of Illimori. And Chadwick's Charms, volumes 1 through 7, which were written by founder Chadwick Boot, were standard textbooks for Charms class at Illimori. A Charms was a type of spell concerned with giving an object new or unexpected properties, and this class mainly consisted of learning those sorts of spells. The Charms Chalice was a possible reward related to the subject. In 1932, Eulalia Hicks taught the subject, and her book, Advanced Charming Casting, was required reading for her fifth-year students.
So, I don't know if we actually talked about it, but is the school starting with age 12 to 18, much like consider grade school through high school?
11.
I don't believe that was
11
ever.
Through 17, just like Hogwarts.
Is it just like Hogwarts? I wasn't sure because we're technically... Go ahead.
Because in... Just like in the... You know, statue for Rapper's Law, you can't hold a wand until outside of school until you're 17. Typically, that's the graduation age is 17.
I didn't know if it followed the American law of you're an adult at 18 or not. So I wasn't sure.
Just like it is in Europe, the standard age of graduating high school is roughly 17, 18. Is roughly where you graduate. So, unless you're me, I'd graduated at almost 19.
well,
we're not all perfect.
No,
I had to restart first grade. I moved for anybody knowing. I wasn't dumb. I moved halfway through the year, so they wanted me to repeat the first grade again. It was dumb.
You had a hard time with your alphabet, didn't you? It's okay. You can admit it. It's a safe place.
It was speech problems. Thank you. speech impediments, which I sometimes deal with. Anyway, no, it's just like Hogwarts. It's ages 11 through 17.
Okay, cool beans.
So then we have Transfiguration. So Transfiguration was likely taught at the school as an article by Illimori scholars. It was published in Transfiguration Today. Transfiguration was the art of changing the form of appearance of an object, and was at which and this was what this class taught. Transfiguration was a theory-based subject regarded as scientific. They also had a tournament called the Transfiguration Tournament.
Now, that would be one I would like to see. Yeah, I would go to that.
Interesting thing there.
That would be really cool. Because the idea of being able to transform just objects into each other.
And Boom comments, I don't think peas are cool. Beans are cool. Maybe cool peas. Change the bean into a pea. There we go.
Yeah, it's just one of those things I got.
Yep. So now we have potions. So potions was held at the school. The Excellence in Potions Cup was a related achievement at the school. Potions was described as the art of creation mixtures with magical effects. It required the correct mixing and stirring of ingredients at the right times and temperatures. The subject also required the use of a wand and the wizarding equivalent of Nomage chemistry.
Yes, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely it is. So now we have Xylomancy. Xylomancy was an extracurricular class offered at the school in 1926. It was an often overlooked type of divination that relied upon twigs. It was also possible that divination was taught at Evelmori, which more than likely it was, since we have Xylomancy. I'd imagine divination was probably pretty standard as well.
Yeah, it's all type of magic.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Arithmancy.
Arithmancy.
God, words.
Yes.
It's the Latin. I swear, it's the Latin in this. So, Arithmancy was likely taught at the school, and the school has a reward called Arithmancy Achievement Accolade. Arithmancy was the branch of magic concerned with the magical properties of numbers. The subject was most likely a theory-based one. It was also assumed that this was the elective subject of Amori, as it was at Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. It's an intense class.
It's essentially math class.
Well, okay, I would assume...
You don't need it.
I would think it would be more like geometry math, because there's a lot of theories and stuff in geometry that I don't remember a single one of them. Took it once and then I was done.
A squared plus B squared equals C squared. That's all I remember.
And then like the Pythagorean theorem. That's what I remember.
I don't remember that.
I don't know what it is, but I remember the name.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the name Pythagorean theorem. I do not remember the actual formula.
Nope, me neither.
Because I haven't used it in over 10 years. But anyway.
Anywho.
So we do have the study of ancient runes. So the study of ancient runes was likely taught at the school, as the school had an award called the Excellence in Runes Cup. The study of ancient runes was a general theological subject that studied ancient rune scripts. It was assumed that this was an elective subject at Ilvermorny, as it is at Hogwarts.
Yes, again, which you see ruins in just about any type of, even our type of magic.
Even mythology or even ancient civilizations use runes. So, I mean, look at the Norse.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say Celtic also use a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have creature care. So creature care was introduced to the school curriculum in 1927, which had been a consequence of the attack on New York City in 1926, the Magizoologist Newton Scamander actions to help the American wizarding community. And we see a Thunderbird.
We do see a Thunderbird.
We see a Thunderbird in the first film. So
yeah,
we see one
of
the houses.
So cool.
And, creates rain, and the rain literally makes everybody forget.
Obliviates
everybody, so that's great.
Yes.
Well,
I thought that was kind of
presumably obliviates. Some people can still remember things, just like Newt's friend, Jacob. He remembers all his stuff, remembers everything after a certain time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, he was with the wizards, though, so I assume that it just didn't.
No, he got hit by it, and he just did, at the end of the film, he forgot everything. But then...
Oh, I don't remember that.
Goldie or
Queenie
went to visit him, and they got together again.
Yeah,
he forgot that she was a wizard or witch, and then Newt came back into his life.
It's been a minute.
He literally remembered everything. He's like, "Oh my god, I started remembering things."
Interesting.
So now, last but not least, we have behind the scenes. So Iva Mori is the only known wizard in school that have been co-founded by a nomash, which, you know, makes sense. In an interview shortly before the release of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire in 2000, J.K. Rowling responded to a question that whether American children could attend Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry by stating, no, they have their own school. You'll find out in book four. Iva Mori, however, was not mentioned in the fourth book. It is likely that she was referring to the revelation that were wizarding schools other than Hogwarts rather than to Iva Mori itself.
I thought it was in a later edition. I thought I saw somewhere it was like a 2014 edition and later where it was.
Possibly. I don't know. Maybe. On the top of my head, unfortunately. So we have Royal Cranberry, an ink from American Quill, an ink shop, Volk's Quills of Distinction, was advertised as Iva Mori's favorite, implying an affiliation between the company and the school.
Because of the cranberry.
Because cranberry.
Mm-hmm.
The Iva Mori school's song was cut from the film, so it's canonically is unclear.
Well, yeah, I think they did begin to sing it.
Right. And the magic of local American Native American tribes played an important role in the construction of Iva Mori. They had a talent for plant magic and animal magic, and their potion making had reached a higher degree in complexity and sophistication than European countries. Students from the Wagapago and Narragansett tribes, who were known to have practiced wandless magic, share their knowledge of Native American magic, in return being taught the techniques of wand work, as the wand wasn't a European invention.
You think they like how flashy and dramatic it is with Probably. The wand, much like Nettie did?
Oh,
yeah.
I guarantee it. Oh, I can see why you guys like this. It's so dramatic, and I see why y'all like doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. It's literally probably just for the dramatic effect because it just seems cooler.
It does seem cooler. And I think like wand lore and like making it is really intense and intricate enough to want to learn it.
So the sorting ceremony is similar to the discarded idea of the founder's statues for the Hogwarts sorting. So that's interesting. Mm. On Pottermore website, those who are sorted into the Iva Mori house have the option to choose between their Hogwarts house theme or the Iva Mori house theme, which now doesn't exist, so you can't do that anymore, sadly.
Obsolete.
In 1926, the New York Ghosts gave their readers an update on what appeared to be the house points and awards given to each house at the time. Iva Mori may have had their own Quidditch Cup and Transfiguration Tournament, as well as awards such as the Charms Chalice, Excellence in Potions Cup, Excellence in Runes Cup, Arthamancy Achievement Accolade, and a Gobstone Goblet. So they had tournament.
I like that they had multiple things.
Gobstones are disgusting. Just saying. They spit, like, fumes at you.
Oh.
If you lose. Yeah. And then there may be an exchange program for Hogwarts and Iva Mori. The Dame Blue Line subway station in Chicago, Illinois, is, according to J.K. Rowling, where students make the exchange.
Ooh. That's nearby.
Right. And then, so far, Iva Mori is the youngest known wizarding school. Which
would make sense.
Which makes sense, because the U.S. is also the youngest country, so.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's awesome.
That clears out. Even though the school was founded before the country was.
It's fine.
just by like 100-some years. It's okay.
It's fine. It's no big deal.
Before, it's okay.
It's okay.
And it's pretty regular. It's pretty fair. But anyway, yeah, that's what I have on Iva Mori this week.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
A lot of cool
stuff. I really
stuff.
Enjoy this.
A lot of cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And but obviously, before we go, we do have our Quizzing World quiz.
We do.
So what was last week's? Nina?
Last week's question was, Bellatrix Lestrange is arguably the scariest of the Death Eaters and murders Sirius Black in the Departments of Mysteries, but Lestrange is her married name. What is Bellatrix's maiden name?
Yeah, I got this a lot of people got this. I would like, I know the a lot of people in the Discord got it because it was like,
But her maiden name is Black. She is the cousin to Sirius Black.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she married, what was his name? He wasn't very notable, but he was there. He did have a part in the war. He did have a part in sitting in Azkaban a lot.
Right. Yeah.
He just, he didn't really do a whole bunch. Rudolphus.
Rudolphus Lestrange.
Okay. Rudolphus Lestrange, yeah, was who he married to. And then there was a funny thing about him being married to Peter Pettigrew, and we were kind of joking about that, if she married Peter Pettigrew in the Discord.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I just could not imagine that at all. I don't think Peter would have actually lived.
No. Well, but, I mean, we find out something else that happens with Bellatrix in a certain Dark Lord. Which is also very disturbing. That actually does happen.
Yes, and her husband actually interacts with that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually like tells a prophecy to them. Yeah, I'll just say it. So, according to the Cursed Child, Bellatrix Lestrange and the Dark Lord have a child,
right?
A daughter. Yeah, which we talked about. So her husband, Rudolphus, was actually the one who told her about the prophecy of the Dark Lord rising again.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So that was another kind of thing that he was in, but really not a whole lot. He was just more of a pawn for the Dark Lord, much like every other Death Eater.
Right. So, that's fair. Mm-hmm. But, so last week's answer was Black. Mm-hmm. Boom's like, hold up, what are you talking about? So the Cursed Child is a play.
Yes.
It is canonical. It is canon to the series. It takes place with Albus Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And his time at Hogwarts, and it's one of Harry's sons. He has an older son, Albus, and then he has a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Three kids. Deals with Albus, the middle child. And deals with his adventures at Hogwarts with Scorpio Malfoy, which is Malfoy's son, because they are... Albus is a Slytherin, because his full name is Albus Severus Potter. So he has a Gryffindor and a Slytherin name in his name. So, or two Gryffindor names and a Slytherin, technically.
Yeah.
If you want to get technical there. But yeah, he's a Slytherin. You go and they deal with that stuff and all that. And yeah, you find out in that play that there's another kid at the school who you find out is the offspring of Voldemort and Bellatrix Lestrange.
Bellatrix. Yes.
Which is very disturbing.
When that happened, we don't know.
as far as we know, she had to have the child before, obviously, Deathly Hallows Part 2. Because she dies.
So yes, obviously.
She gets turned to ash by Molly Weasley. So,
in an epic fight.
With the best line ever delivered in a Harry Potter film and book.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, it is a little wild. I actually plan on seeing it
online.
Yeah, I actually plan on going and seeing it because it's going to be in theaters near me from...
is it really?
Yes, from September of this year until May of next year. And tickets go on sale for me, like pre-sale, I think on the 6th. So in like 5 days. Me and a couple other people that I know plan on going. We haven't quite made a date yet, and none of the dates are out. But we're wondering if it's going to play every weekend or if it's going to be 1 week a month. Because it's going to run for quite a while. But yeah, they are playing it up in Chicago.
What?
So you might need to make a trip this way.
I don't have the money to go to Chicago.
Well, that's fair. I mean, it goes all the way till May of next year. So
I need to figure out.
Yes. So if anyone is interested, The Cursed Child is playing in Chicago from September 2024 till May of 2025.
And... North American tour. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. Son of a gun. It's not even close to me. Oh, well. It will eventually come towards... hopefully get here north to, like, towards Ohio and Columbus.
Right. And if you can't... If you can't make it, which is fine, it is possible for schools to now play that play
in school.
So just go and petition your local school.
Yeah, that is true. They did make the DC's closest for you. Oh, that's nice. I'm looking at flights now. Wow, boom, you're on it. Holy crap. All right. Yeah, so I'm not going to DC. I like visiting DC. I'm not going to go there just to go see a play.
No, that's fair. Yes. But
anyway, so
I'm glad to see that it's out in theaters now, like being in plays and stuff.
It's not just in Europe. Yeah.
Right.
So what is our question this week, Nina?
So it has to do with the schools.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. I was reached out by Hassel the Hoff, and he's like, I got a question for you. I was like, okay, cool. But how many major wizarding schools do we know of? Just a number.
Ooh.
How many? And if you're feeling extra good about yourself, let me know how many have been named.
There you go. Ooh,
how many have been named? That is a good one. This one is a little hard. Yes. So let me know how many major wizarding schools do we know of.
Which I think we might have mentioned most of them in our shows.
Most of them we have. Yes. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. That's fair.
I don't want to give away anything.
I now know two. No, boom. You know more than two if you watched Goblet of Fire or read the book. You know at least four now.
Yes.
And we said
so we're getting there.
On the show today anyways.
Yeah, that's fair.
So there's four of you right there for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, awesome. So everybody, thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. And remember, the wand chooses the witch or wizard. Thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. You can find us on the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net. You can find us on the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord. You can also find us on Twitter at WWLorecast and even email us at wizardingworldlorecast@gmail.com.